Welcome to Under the Neon, the podcast all about the local Las Vegas music scene and the people that make it. I'm Joshua Courtright.
I'm Tiffany Salerno.
And we're exploring the Las Vegas local music scene, talking to people that make the music, and getting up some shenanigans.
We're back. Episode 2. Thank you everybody who has been waiting patiently for us to get this thing back on the train, on the tracks. Today we have...
My name is Solomon. I'm from Hidden Scars, the bass player.
I'm Piper, guitarist from Hidden Scars.
I am Brendan K. Jones from The Midnight Disease and Sounding.
And of course, I'm Joshua, and this is Tiffany.
Hi.
Hi. Hey.
So,
hi, guys.
So thank you guys for coming on. Lucky listeners, you get a twofer tonight. You get two different acts.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag tonight. Couple random... from the Vegas scene. It's cool though because they have interests in common, metal and industrial music, and we're going to talk about Brendan's new project, which is industrial. And would you describe yourselves as industrial metal?
We style ourselves as being industrial metal, you know, industrial goth metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we add a lot of electronic effects and a lot of visual effects. We actually have our own light show that is programmed to our entire set. And I think, you know, a lot of those key theatrical aspects of the live performance honestly tie into the industrial theme.
Right on. Now, you guys made your debut at House of Blues almost a year ago to the day.
Mm-hmm. Almost a year ago, actually. We played on the 14th of last year. Then we just played August 9th at the House of Blues for our anniversary.
Was that really cool going back there and having a crowd there just for you?
It was great, honestly. It was actually a much better crowd. Yeah. Just goes to show like the growth we've had on our local scene. We had just returned from tour at the end of June, beginning of July. And we've been playing a lot of local shows with a lot of local acts, and playing the House of Blues show, you know, we were able to show this town how much of growth and how much potential we have. You know, a lot of things have happened within that 1 year, and it's great to see that we have a following and dedicated fans and support from our local community as well. So
yeah, I read an article about your debut night. It was a comp homegrown show. Shout out to Lori Steele. And
mm-hmm. Thank you.
It was nothing but glowing praise for you guys. It was like, these guys have immediately made fans. I don't remember who, unfortunately, where the article was from or who wrote it. Sorry about that. But it made an impression on me. I was like, it's rare when you come out for your debut show as part of a multi-band show.
Yeah, and like a huge stage like the House of Blues.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Oh, the sound there is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they got a sound person in front and a sound person on the side.
Right up to the mm-hmm. side. Yeah.
I played there and I was just like, this is amazing. I can hear everything.
Which one do I talk to?
Wait, we actually have side fills on this stage? Wow.
And of course, the dressing rooms.
Oh, yeah.
The green rooms were amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But I was really, really impressed with that that concept of just, we're coming out, balls to the wall, we're making a statement, and people just ate it up.
Basically. Oh, yeah. We hit the ground running with that show.
Which, yeah, I was deeply jealous. Now, Piper was not there at that show. You got added later on, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, unfortunately, the other three members of the band?
Yes.
Yeah. The other three members of the band are not here. For those of you listening that don't know Hidden Scars, you should definitely check them out on their band, or their website, rather, or YouTube. Links will be in the show notes.
We're on all the major streaming platforms, Spotify, iTunes, you name it.
Google Play, everything.
And I definitely, I like the idea of Joel, the frontman, who had this idea of the visual concept.
Mm-hmm. So, he's the brainchild.
Yeah, I mean, it was Joel's band, maybe mm-hmm. from the beginning, according to everything I could see. Has he talked about like where the visual side came from and with like the latex skin and the contact lenses and everything?
Oh yeah.
No,
he's open about it.
Yeah. No, but what he wanted to present was a dark image, you know, like when it comes to our music, we want to create.
Oh, right. No, exactly.
We understand like the true realism of the human experience that almost everything, you know, is in a way a fight for survival. So when you endorse music and you create music that that supports that idea, mm-hmm. you know, you were only able to get that message across with intense imagery. You know, intense, dark.
It's imagery. True. I mean, yeah. Whether you love him or hate him, people know Marilyn Manson,
mm-hmm.
and you hear the music, you immediately think,
mm-hmm. which was a huge influence of Joel's
yeah.
as well.
Obviously, yeah, I could tell that. Yeah,
one of the big focuses is about, revealing your scars, and it's about the life stuff that can put those scars on you that are hidden in a sense because they're not visual.
Right.
But we'll all go through something that's mentally damaging, so. A lot of our songs can be about embracing that and just kind of overcoming it and revealing your scars and owning them mm-hmm. and actually kind of overcoming that.
Right on.
It becomes a part of you,
yep.
you know.
And just what made you?
Now, Brendan is a big metal fan, metalhead.
I like metal, I don't want to, you know. Right, like, you're like, oh, he's the biggest metal fan, and then well, get called out as a poser yeah. or something.
Now you're going to be on trivia next week. Yeah.
He is wearing but a button-down shirt, I don't know.
Look, just, hey.
I mean, you're wearing all black.
You know what I will say this about metal shows. That is those are the most accepting shows I've ever been to.
It's like a big fan.
Because when I was younger, like, the punk shows, because I grew up in the punk scene, and like that was a thing where if you didn't look the right way or this and that.
Right. There is a punk uniform, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll go to metal shows looking like this, like I'm some East Coast prepper, and everyone's like, fuck yeah, dude. Like they're just, you like this? I like this too. Fuck yeah.
It's about the music.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys ever had this, but I know we talked about this on your interview on Room 6, that sometimes you get put on shows, you're like, what am I doing here? I am so not like these other acts. My music is different. And I remember doing like indie rock, wearing, you know, some t-shirt with a funny saying and some, you know, jeans and
that used to be a classic uniform, and ironic t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would have one of those uniforms going on, and we would be sandwiched between, I mean, you talk goth metal, like with the makeup and the like, and there'd be an acoustic act opening or something weird, and the promoters would just be, you know, whatever works. And I remember, like, you'd see a sea of black and safety pins.
Yeah.
And hair that was mostly in the back and not so much on the front. And I remember walking through, and I'm the most metal fucker here. I'm wearing whatever I want. You guys, yeah, it's the same with punk. And I've actually seen posts lately from a couple people about the punk uniform. Like, yeah. You checked off all the list, you know, you got it, went to Hot Topic or whatever, and you got your stuff. And I like the idea of the visceral nature of your band. It seems like you're not, what's the word I'm looking for? You're not buying into, this is how a heavy metal band should look and sound.
Yeah.
You're doing your own thing and Joel's doing his own thing, which is hard in this town.
Yeah. Which is difficult for us to have an umbrella genre like we do, because yeah. we have elements of it. Bunch of different genres, and mm-hmm. there's hundreds of thousands of subgenres of metal now that are legit, that make no sense, like Viking, horror, Thor, I don't know, something crazy. But it's just interesting that we can have a song that can have three different genres influenced into it. Like it could be a thrash beat to a slam or something different, but you still have to have an overall genre. But
right, you got that elevator pitch.
We got to claim something, but we like to dig into all different aspects.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what's very common for metal bands in general is just how you're willing to brand yourself. You know, mm-hmm. that's where all of these subgenres come into play.
Oh, there's so many subgenres.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Millions.
I remember there's a website, I think, where it charts it all out. Uh-huh. And it branches it all out, and it's ridiculous. It's like 32 or whatever different branches. And you're just like, what happened to just metal?
Exactly. I was actually just saying outside that, like, you could put almost any adjective in front of metal and it becomes a genre, like hat metal.
Like, yeah.
Ooh, what hat metal sound like?
Like, these guys are asking me, like, what my genre is, and I'm like, you know, we kind of got in that conversation, like, oh, I hate that question. Does that question suck when you're a musician and band?
There's a video about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess we did. We talked about that. But, like, because I go for the, here are my influences. Here's like the stuff that really, you know, gets me going. And then that shit just goes over people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, fuck, what am I going to say? So I always make up, you know, something funny. And I always say something different every time. And I kind of think that's where that, like you're saying, the mishmash of like, we're this thing, we're these
but
four different things.
But only musicians understand like that concept.
Yeah,
right? And if you're explaining it to somebody who honestly doesn't play music professionally, they're like, they kind of get lost, like, what? Like, when you have a jazz breakdown.
I kind of feel them out before I answer the question.
Right.
Because what sucks is when you have to answer that, who's your influence? I'm like, hey, you want to talk for an hour? Because if I know you're not a musician, I'll say a mainstream band.
Well,
I know
you're puppies. Gonna know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. When I could talk about, like, you know, I'm mainly a guitar player. So I was like, oh, this is how I play guitar. This is what I was like ripping off when I was trying to rip off when I was young. I was trying to play like this guy.
It's all thievery.
And then I'm like, but if I pick up a bass, I'm Peter Hook from New Order. I want to be Peter Hook, you know? Like, I want those, like, I want to play the melody, like, you know, the high notes and stuff like that.
Let's be honest. Every musician, when you're playing music, you always got that one influence in your head that you're going to try and sound like or feel like or look like.
Mm-hmm.
I admit it. For me, it's if it's rock, if I'm doing like rock and roll, it's Dave Grohl. I admit it.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, Dave Grohl at Foo Fighters, I think, is one of the more commercially successful bands.
Well,
you know, they managed you know, like, that's a band that, like, managed to sustain themselves all the way into the stratosphere. Now there's always going to be Foo Fighters.
And I mean,
they got an album next year.
Don't make me cry.
Yeah,
don't make me cry.
No,
I was Chris Cornell kick lately, just like over and over again. Just like
Chris Cornell
on Spotify.
Dave, like the greats are so good at, like, no matter what it is the song sounds like, you still know it's them from like the first note.
Mm-hmm.
Or the first, you know, I there are songs I can hear literally the first drum beat, and I know what the song is strictly because they managed to somehow craft a sound all unique to them, which is the hard way to do it if you, mm-hmm. you know, are trying to be commercially successful. But yeah,
that all goes back to like talking about how you can brand yourself too, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, you know, you can brand yourself off of the look, you can brand yourself off of the music, but I think if you're going to be a musician, it all should be about the music.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's the fact that you can recognize that first drum beat, that you already know what
right.
that what song it is and who's performing it.
That's how I know, okay, I'm a fan of this band or this singer or whatever. If it's playing in the background somewhere and I didn't even realize it's playing and I'm singing the song, I'm like, oh, well, I guess I like that.
Yep.
You know, because sometimes it catches you by surprise. Do you know the band Hyperion's Horizon, which rebranded recently as Hades Hand?
Hmm. Not familiar
nope.
with that
oh.
band.
Local band. When I played House of Blues, they were on that same bill. It was the Envy Showcase. I think you just stumped me with a local band.
That's what you have to do. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but they haven't done the Envy Showcase in quite some time.
Right. This was the second one. And this was the first incarnation of my indie rock band. It went through like 3.5 incarnations, as you know.
Right.
I used to front a cover band called Revolving Door, and it was the best name ever. We had seven keyboardists at one. We went through seven keyboardists. Oh, no, seven drummers and like four keyboardists. And we were a seven-piece band when we started and ended up as a four-piece band. And the second drummer of those seven ended up being the drummer at the end. And the only original people at the end were the lead guitarist and myself. And it was cool. It was great, but it was weird. It was like trying to tell people, how long have you been doing this? Well, me?
Once you run through all the cycles, you know, you kind of lose count after
but,
the first.
But yeah, there's actually more than one band called Revolving Door. There's like the Revolving Door band stuff, but it's hard to find an original name too. I'm sure there's actually Hidden Scars bands. I don't know if you know this in other countries.
There was one other, but yeah. You know, I mean, I don't think they've been doing anything commercially for, I don't know, like
right. But
10,
Joel managed to get the rights
years.
To here in the U.S. So
yeah,
it's good there. Yeah, you got the copyright for it here.
Nice.
That's how we were able to get the website.
Are you
as well.
Trademarked and like all that? That's
see,
cool.
And that's listeners, especially if you're new musicians or just haven't thought about this. This is part of that business side of music that nobody wants to think about.
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't take care of it, it could come back and bite you when all of a sudden you're popular and hey, someone wants your money.
You will get a cease and desist order.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
A band I like, called, which I thought had a great name. Well, it's mostly one guy. He called this thing Dad Punchers. It's the drummer from Touche Amore. It's like a side project, it's like solo thing. I was like, that's such a great fucking name.
It is.
And then he got sent like a cease and desist letter by like some band that I never heard before. I haven't heard anything about them since, you know, like can't
right.
really find anything about them anywhere on the internet. But he had to change, like, you know, change the name. So I feel like I have a collector's item because I have the first run of records where
right.
it says Dead Punchers on the
nice.
cover, but now he calls it Warm Thoughts.
Nice.
Which is, you know, it kind of fits the kind of like nice emo thing.
It certainly is like...
I'm having warm thoughts when I'm thinking about punching my dick.
It makes you ask the next question.
Why?
There's a local band. They're a cover band, but they were called Stoked! Exclamation point. And suddenly they got one of those cease and desist, so now they're so stoked.
So stoked.
Like, they went with it, and they just said, all right, fuck you, we'll... And so,
yeah, we're going to step it up.
But I was
yeah.
just like, it's a cover band. And this band, that had, it was like Ohio or something. And you know, they're, who are they? What are they doing?
You heard about Bipolar, right? Yeah. You know about Bipolar. So
I know
they
Bipolar.
Actually, they actually got a message from a cover band. I don't know if it was in Florida or something like that. They're called the Bipolar Band.
That's not yeah. the same thing.
No.
They were a cover band. I don't know, like an X amount of time. But Bipolar has been playing in this town for well over 15, close to 20 years. You know what I mean? And then this small cover band in Florida is going to come at them saying, like, well, you can't take our name.
You can't take our name. You know, I don't know if he was the original bass player, but a bass player named Tom for Bipolar?
Yeah, Tom. No,
I would describe him, but he just sounds like every other metal guy, you know, like. Kind of.
I always known Chris was the the bass player for that.
This band. This was quite a few years ago. I sold furniture to him. Yeah, he invited me to the show, but I couldn't make it. But I thought, it's such a small town, Vegas. It's so oversaturated. Mm-hmm. But he's like, yeah, I'm in Bipolar. And then later I found out that I guess he got replaced or quit or whatever. small world. So Brandon, Hidden Scars have been kind of monopolizing this podcast. Let's talk at you.
Okay.
What is Sounding like?
Sounding's your new project.
Yeah, Sounding's my new project.
Is that your industrial project?
Yeah, it's industrial noise pop. That's what we're saying.
Awesome.
You know, kind of like a kind of thing like Shushu, that sort of thing where it could be dark and spooky, but then there's hooks in the middle, you know. Kind of, I don't know.
Now, is the occult angle still going to be working in there?
We've done it a little bit. I guess that stuff works in all of my art because I actually study hermetics and the occult and things like that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this probably will push it a little more because that goes with the whole spooky industrial
thing.
Tell
me about Sounding. Like what made you want to get into this kind of music?
The industrial side.
So like, I've always liked that stuff from the '80s, you know, like Sisters of Mercy, Front 242, things like that, like all the Wax Track stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to make music like this, kind of branch out, but I've never known how to execute it. And, my roommate, Chad, he's like an old school goth kid. And, it's funny, my favorite band, the Mountain Goats, which is more like my Midnight Disease stuff, you know, acoustic singer songwriter.
I hope you die. I hope we all die.
he put out a record.
I already like that song.
They put out a record called Goths, you know, and it was like a whole concept album based around that stuff. Cause he was a goth kid. And it kind of...
He was?
Yeah. He was friends with Roz Williams from fucking
Believe
Christian
Death. Mountain Goats?
Yeah, he was friends with Roz Williams from Christian
that.
Death. There's actually a really old Mountain Goats record where he like has a tribute to Roz Williams on the back. Like he's writing his ghost letter.
I'm a fairly new fan, so I don't know
yes,
all this.
I was goth. I was also goth. So.
You were goth?
Wasn't everyone?
So,
at one point,
I was mainly just a metalhead. I wasn't
nice. Goth. Yeah.
My soul
I'm
is
enough,
black
I,
enough.
I'm old enough. I remember when goth clubs were a thing, and people would just kind of do the two-step goth
and smoke,
shuffle and
smoke clove cigarettes.
Yeah, they couldn't afford to go in the goth club. They would be out in their cars in the parking lot listening to Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode,
and I was right there with them.
But that kind of re-sparked both of our interests in that kind of music, and we were kind of always like kicking around this idea. And I don't know, like, I want to get pretty graphic here to explain what Sounding is. Because this started, like, as a joke. But Sounding is, like, a BDSM thing where they put a metal rod in the guy's dick.
Oh,
they fuck his dick.
Sounding.
They fuck his dick
hole. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, like...
I went nautical with it.
I'm, like, a high... you know,
you
like,
have piqued my interest.
I thought
really
you were
sick of
getting
the
it's
device.
Really,
what
it's
really...
What
does
that
around?
Say again?
It's where you like they put a metal like a metal rod in a guy's dick hole and they fuck his dick hole with that metal
rod. So it's
rod.
Like a catheter.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But for
catheter.
What is okay, people, what is wrong with you?
We should have brought one for the show.
I want to see this.
There's one. I mean, I haven't seen it, but Chad told me.
So, okay, why did you? I need to know why you were calling this Sounding.
Okay, so the thing is, it's like we always joke around about really fucked up stuff at home. and like I can handle almost anything, but for some reason you talk about stuff in a dick hole, it just kind of gets to me, you know, kind of like, oh, like I wince, like I can, like, I almost kind of like feel it.
I actually know someone who would be into that.
Oh god, I have a lot of kinks, but nothing in the dick hole. Nothing, that's what I'm saying. But I was like, man, because. And I mean, and like Chad is my like electronic guy also, like, I mean, he's always in that realm, so he kind of gives me a lot of that set of music. And I was like, dude, wouldn't that, I was like, think about the way, because he always brings it up because he knows how it makes me feel. I was like, think about how that makes me feel. And I was like, what if we created like a harsh noise band? You know, like we're creating music that makes people feel like how I feel thinking about rods in my dick.
So,
and that was the idea. It almost was a joke. And then we're like, hey, let's really fucking record something. And then of course, I start playing in like a kind of a poppy way, so it becomes one thing or the other. It's not harsh noise anymore. It has noise elements, but it's more that industrial new wave thing.
Yeah.
And then like Chad helps me execute it because I'm like the like more. We have the same dynamic as a band we both really love, which is Coil. And I feel like not enough people know them for some reason. They're sort of like godfathers of industrial. That those two guys are the guys Trent Reznor wanted to be, and Coil even remixed a bunch of his stuff early on.
Mm.
But they had this dynamic where Peter Christopherson, he was a visual artist, he kind of did the electronics and editing, and John Balance was like the punk dude, he played in Psychic TV, stuff like that. And like we have the same thing, like I'm from the punk background, Chad's a visual artist, he's good with the electronics. So basically we'll just record, like we'll say, hey, let's record tonight, we'll get like two bottles of wine, and I'll just play like drums, and you know, he's like, play this on the bass, try something like this on the bass, I'll do that, keyboards, he takes it all, edits it together, because I have like a much more like linear way of thinking when I write songs, and he puts shit together in ways I wouldn't even think about doing it. So he's like, oh, I think I have that track, I think I finished that track. He gives it to me, we kind of decide, and I kind of lean on him. I'm like, do you think I should sing? Because I kind of didn't want my lyrics or vocals to be at the center, like with my main thing. But he'll be like, yeah, I think you should sing on it. It's kind of empty right here, just sing on it.
So it's like stream of consciousness almost? So the recording part of it?
Yeah, the recording part of it.
That's for that type of music, that sounds like perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it works perfectly.
Did you decide it's over the end?
That's the hard part.
That's all Chad, because he's the one that edits it all together, and then I just go, if I have to go back and be like, all right, I'll write lyrics, and I sit down in my room for one or two nights and like just scribble shit in my notebook and try to sing over it over and over, you know, it gives me the file. But we kind of decide it together, but it's usually more him. He kind of has the arrangements together, like he has that ear. So,
well, I want to thank you for introducing me to something I have never heard of, and I thought I knew.
I was gonna say,
I thought I knew all sorts of stuff that I shouldn't know, and I wish I didn't.
Yeah, he told me he'd seen one video where it was almost like a Sibian, like a fuck machine, like it was like on a motor,
God.
Just
go
going
on.
In and,
oh,
going
God.
In and out.
Well, you say all that reminds me of, I forget the acronym at first. It's three letters, but it's three letters and then Pain Olympics. You ever hear about that?
Oh, Pain Olympics.
Yeah,
yeah. I remember Pain Olympics.
That?
Up, yeah,
there's a video, like, I guess, of sounding, because I remember a 9-inch nail going through the guy's dick hole and him chopping
it
off.
Is that why it's called 9-inch nails? Is that why Trent Reznor called it 9-inch nails?
I hope not.
Did we just discover the secret?
Yeah.
I think, you know, there are certain questions you don't want answers to.
Yeah.
And I think that might be true.
Trent,
so.
I mean,
well, that's the curse of
he did cover Hurt. I mean, he did write Hurt, rather, Johnny Cash cover. But.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I'm going to put a disclaimer at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah.
That was a good time to talk about feelings.
Yeah.
I feel
funny.
So, when did everybody get into music, and why? Why was that your artistic expression?
Well, okay, so when I was a kid, you know, I wasn't particularly good at anything. You know, I tried sports and all this other stuff. You know, I had a very short attention span, you know. I wrote in a journal a lot, you know, but I would just, you know, just draw pictures of, like, you know, like rabbits and shit, you know. Anyway.
Go on.
Then my sixth grade year came about and I had to pick an elective, you know, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, my dad was a musician. He played bass and guitar and opened up for huge bands. And I was like, okay, well, you know what? I think I'll try music. So I picked up orchestra. I started playing the cello when I was in the sixth grade. And then when I started playing it, you know, I realized, like, you know, I got a lot of praise from my teacher. You know, my teacher saw that I had a lot of natural talent for playing an instrument, you know. And as time went on throughout my middle school and high school years, I realized that I actually do have a very natural talent. It was the first thing I ever like first recognized that me being good at, you know. And I figured, you know, I want to be like my dad, you know, I want to start playing live shows and playing gigs and all this other stuff. But then I got into metal and you know, listening to Lamb of God. I remember being 15 years old playing Laid to Rest in front of my mirror and doing the breakdown and like looking at myself while I'm jamming out in the mirror and everything like that. But, you know, I do music because it's the one thing I know that I'm good at and I know a lot about. And if I'm going to be successful at anything, you might as well be successful at something that you're talented at.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, it, you know, if you can monetize your talents, you're using them to their fullest potential. So that's how I started. That
also, you get the satisfaction of it makes you happy, and I mean it's self satisfying. Whether you
sometimes it makes me happy.
That loadout at 2 in the morning.
I find that musicians, it is a blessing and a curse, and talk about that.
Well, the way you want to look at it is that, you know, it's about art in general. You know, I think, like, honestly, I hold the belief that all art comes from pain. It comes about, you know, it's about pain. It's because you've never truly felt anything physical unless it has hurt you in a certain kind of way. Unless you actually have the neurons firing off in your brain that this certain thing causes you discomfort. And the only way that people can connect to your art is if they're able to feel that too. And of course, the most intense feeling that any human can feel is pain. You know, that if, like, I think honestly, the moment you know you've made it as an artist, whether you be a photographer, a visual artist, filmmaker, okay, a musician, is that when you create an image for somebody that they feel the same thing you felt when you created it, that's...
Put them in that mind space.
Yeah. Yep.
Put them in that spot. Make them feel what you felt.
See, and I knew I wanted to talk to you, Solomon, for a long time, because your Facebook posts are just like this. I'm constantly hurting your Facebook posts. I'm like, this guy I want to talk to.
Oh, honestly. Thank you.
So I guess my memes aren't good enough. But, okay.
But let's talk to other people here at Piper.
Oh, when I started?
Music? Yeah, why?
Originally, I started for a girl, actually, when I was in fourth grade. They had a choir class, and aww, this girl I had a crush on was in the choir class, and I was like, hey, more time in the paint, I can get the score in, because I was just now realizing what the thing between my leg was for.
That's a great reference. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah, you know, so I started going to a choir class, and next thing you know, I didn't care about her anymore. I'm practicing my scales and do re mi fa sol la ti do's, and we just never dated. But
I never knew that. I never asked you that.
So I started.
Do you remember her name?
Katie Walker.
So you should thank her.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
She taught me a lot.
Nice.
This is my priority.
Also, Katie, look in the description for my phone number in case you want to know.
But no, I started there, and then I grew up on music. My mother was country, and my father was classic rock. And then I found a song by Trivium, and they've made such an influence, I've got them tattooed on my arm now.
It sure does.
But they had a song called Suffocating Sight, and I heard that song, and for some reason, I was like, I gotta play that. And it was nothing else but the guitar. And up to that point, I've learned how to play the recorder, the ukulele, and, well, kind of sing. Because at the time, I was in music in Hawaii, so that was your options. So I heard that track, and I was just like, I got to learn how to do that. So I begged my father for a guitar for, you know, half a year till Christmas, and I got a Walmart first act guitar. And 3 months later, I could play a very messed up version of that song. And it just kind of put me on a metal path, and I found all these different metal bands. And then I became the black sheep of my family, and they're, turn down that music, you know, they're that people, you know. But nice. That's kind of where it landed for me, is that I guess.
Did they tell you to cut your hair too?
Oh, yeah. But my hair goes out like a fro. So I never got the long, you know, head spin hair. I got the fro.
I know how you feel.
Yep. Well, yeah.
I need to get you in a room with Justin Calloway, bassist for Dirt Halo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Justin, that man has a fro.
No, we know Justin.
No. The southern accent and just the personality. It's like your Clark Kent Superman. It's
Well, yeah, that's why I got into it. And the reason I stay into it is because the stage has always been there. Mm-hmm. I've been in over 30 bands now since joining Hidden Scars.
Wow.
In the time, I'm 26.
Wow.
So I played my first show in this town when I was 13. And it was not paid or anything. It was just, you know, I had to have permission to even be there.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I couldn't even stay at the bar afterward. You know, I had to stand against the wall, and then I could play, and then I could stand against the wall, and then I could leave before like 8 o'clock. But it was my first show, and it kind of put a whole like music bug in me. So the next 4 years, I taught myself 14 different instruments. And that's kind of what this sleeve's gone into, is so many different instruments.
Wait, I want to back up for a second. You said you've been in like 30 bands since joining Hidden Scars?
No, no, up until...
Okay.
Yeah, I
where do you find the time?
Yeah, yeah. I might have mixed that side up, yeah.
Damn.
And for people who may be starting bands, it's just for being persistent. I mean, you'll have an average of 6 months before you take a band from the garage to the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And 80% of the time, that's when the band breaks up.
Is pretty much
butting heads.
Either that or right after your biggest show ever.
Exactly. Right when you're about to make it, and then one guy, I gotta do this.
Or indifference, right? And exactly. No dedication.
And that's a big issue with Vegas, is you find people who are committed for 2 weeks. They're, I'm gung-ho, and then they go play a show and realize, hey, you got paid maybe $100, and you got to split that for five people.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're out the door.
That's the problem with bigger bands. That's why eventually my band went to three-piece.
Yep.
I was just like, if we're going to struggle, let's struggle for slightly more money, you know? And it forced me as the front man and only guitarist to figure out how do I do this? I'm so used to just being the rhythm guitarist.
Yep.
And now I've got to somehow figure out solos. And I was never a big soloer, but I managed to write solos germane to the song that fit the song, which is a big thing. I think in metal, my experience, anyway, most metal solos are really flashy, really fast, or, you know, at least impressive, but they still fit the song.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of Yngwie Malmsteen.
They'll stay in key, but what people will talk about is staying, as it's called being a box soloist.
I've
heard of staying in one scale, one position.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I love when you hear that. You hear them pushing it, and you're like, you pay attention. All right. But now you bring it back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of the speed metal where you get just those trills and everything, they'll stay in like one box and they'll maybe move up one whole position.
Going back to Tyrants by Night, they do such a good job with their solos.
Oh, yeah. They're incredible.
It's just right. Just enough. How about you, Brandon? What got you into music?
I grew up in a musical house, not in the sense that like everyone was playing instruments, but just music was always played. Oh, you know, the early part of my life, my mom's a single mother, and we were with my grandparents. My grandma loved music, so she like just always had something playing. My mom, I discovered her records. We were learning to use a turntable really early. I'd go through all her crates of records and like listen to all the 80s music she grew up with. And it was just always like my favorite like pastime. Even as a little kid, I could just sit there for hours, like laying on the floor, and I listened to that. Like Culture Club was like my favorite band, like in third grade, you know, because of my mom, like all the 80s stuff. And then she had like a little keyboard. She would try to teach herself stuff, but not get too into it. Or have like a little Casio SK1, like really old school ones. And I always mess around with them. But then in middle school, I started to like really wanna, you know, you start buying get money and you go buy your own CDs and. I don't know, it just kind of pushed me through. And I was like, I want a guitar. I begged for a guitar, got it, tried to teach myself, wasn't very good. I was like, well, fuck, I'm going to disappoint my parents that bought me a guitar. So I ended up taking a guitar class at school. And then I found that that transition from middle school into high school, started getting into punk music. And that became my social life, like music equal to social life. Because I knew I started to meet people that play guitar or drums or anything. And that's what we do after school, and hang out in the garage.
I always think of the kids that were in band or played instruments was the cool kids, and a lot of musicians I talked to. I was such a loser.
I was a band.
Yeah,
leader.
I was a fucking loser. I felt like I was so like I don't know, nervous and shy for a long time in my life, and I never did the whole thing of like, oh, I'll play guitar and then I'll finally get laid and that'll be the magical moment in high school or something. Like,
I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. So, you know, that was the thing, you know, like that was just it. Meeting people and finding a sense of community, especially through punk rock. And you know, I was old enough that I experienced the last couple years of like the Huntridge here in town. So just going to all ages shows, didn't even matter like what bands we saw, we would fucking hang out. I remember being on the patio.
War at the Huntridge.
It's a shame that place closed.
It is a shame.
But does playing music give you confidence? I mean, it's such a, it is a skill that you have to develop and practice, and it takes a lot of work. It could do either or.
It could be a confidence booster or a destroyer.
It really depends
on how much practice you put in. Because if you mess up on a big stage with some people out there, that could really break your confidence. Mm-hmm. But if you nail it, that boosts your confidence. Mm-hmm. So it could be a hit and miss.
Sorry, cutting you off.
Oh, you're fine.
It gives me confidence. And I kind of came to doing my own solo thing late because I played in bands and stuff. And then... I always wrote. I like writing too. Those two big things that I like. It was like literature and music. I didn't do any work in school. I would sit in the back and like read a book. You know, they're like, you're very smart. You always have your nose in a book. But why don't you do anything in here? So I liked writing, and I like telling stories. And I wanted to write songs. And I was like, I can't like sing. That's the thing I can't do. I don't know how to fucking sing. It sucks. Like some people are just naturally gifted. Like my little sisters, for some reason, since they're little kids, could just hit all these notes. You know, like go up and down, and. But finally, you know, this was like eight years ago, and I was like, you know what, I just gotta try it, because I have all these songs, maybe it's not the best, but I'll just start going to open mics and doing it, and that gave me more confidence, because I'd get good feedback, constructive criticism, or positive feedback, and like the songs are good, maybe you could do this or that, and meeting a whole other community of musicians, songwriters that are trying to help each other out, lift each other up, and that gave me a lot of confidence. And then just to really put myself out there and now like playing shows and recording and doing all that. And, you know, thinking maybe I might be able to do this like as a career or something, you know, but that's the part that where it's like you said, does it bring you joy? It's like, yeah, it brings me immense joy when I play and people respond and they're like, oh, I love that. I love those lyrics. Like, that's my favorite thing when people come up afterwards too. Like, I like that. I like the funny story you told before that song. And I like that thing you said because I know exactly what you meant in that verse. Like, or I like how you mentioned that bar because we all go to that bar or those cross streets or something. And then, but what sucks though is when you plug along for a while and you kind of like, oh shit, I'm spilling scotch on myself.
Someone's got a drinking problem.
you need a nipple on there?
For a while.
Yeah, you're like, well, fuck, do I keep doing it? Because I work my day job. I keep doing it. But it does make me like so happy. So you got to get to that too. Like, well, even if I don't make it, it's like, man, I'm really lucky I have this outlet. Because I see people are so miserable at work, and I think, what the fuck do you do outside of work? Like, why does this place upset you so much?
Right.
So I feel like I'm very lucky. That's what makes me think I'm lucky. Like, oh, I have a great outlet.
Do you have to get to another level? Do you have to achieve a certain amount of success? Can you just keep doing this outside, you know, as a hobby, as something that keeps you sane, something as an outlet?
Yeah.
Is that enough for you to keep doing it?
I think if I didn't make it, you know, quote unquote, I definitely would never stop writing songs. I can't, it's like a compulsion, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, when I sit there at night, like, I just kind of always have a guitar in my lap. I'll be in my room watching a movie or something, or something I like, but can't ignore, like a baseball game, you know, and I just start dicking around on the guitar. I'm like, that's kind of cool. And I look through my notebook and I see some stuff I'd written down. I sing it. I sing more stuff that comes to my head. I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, fuck. That's a song. Got a new song. Got another song. Like, I can't imagine that, like, going away.
That sounds so familiar.
If you don't let it out, that'll just build up and drive crazy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Go back to the Mountain Goats. You know, I was listening to him when he was still just a lo-fi act. And for those, like, first 10 years, I mean, he was a psychiatric nurse who happened to put out these records that had a small following. And I always thought that was so cool, you know, because it was so human. I'm like, oh,
talking
this guy's
a perfect job for writing music,
yeah.
Though.
This guy's just a dude that works a job, and like he makes these cool little stories.
What does everyone do for work if you want to talk about it?
Let's plug our company.
No judgment here.
I'm in construction. I have two jobs. I'm in construction as a glazer, so I do like glass install. So like right now I'm working on the Raider Stadium, so that's pretty cool.
Wow.
That's a cool job to have. So I get to build the city. Hours suck, but it's pretty good to have a consecutive money coming
isn't
in.
Isn't it like 10-hour days? Or
you're outdoors doing that, right? Yeah, that sucks. Mm-hmm.
And then on Saturday, I get my easy job. I work at a mail location called Postal Annex, and it's basically just like a UPS store, kind of like a Kinko's. But it's my laid-back job.
You're a hard worker.
I got Sundays off, which is sometimes rehearsal days.
So if I want to interview you on Room 6, it needs to be a Sunday, basically.
Sunday's just the best day.
Right? Sunday's 2 o'clock.
24 hours off that day.
Noted. Next.
Song?
Oh, I'm unemployed.
Just as of recent, though.
Yeah, I used to work in a billing office for physicians. And, I hated it.
Huh.
It was, I was good at it. You know, what it is that it's accounting. You know, you look at accounts receivable. Let's say you have, you're a doctor and you have an account open with all of your outstanding claims. What that is that it's an asset.
Right.
You know, it's almost like a cash cow if you have a company or a billing manager that's able to manage it, you know. So basically you're working on revenue cycle management, you know, making sure that claims go in and they come out paid in and out of the account. And over time, I realized, like, you know, I was really good at it. You know, like, I was really good at accounting. I was really good at managing and making sure that the doctor got the paycheck he deserved at the end of the month. I was really good at that, but it didn't bring me joy.
What kind of job are you looking for now?
I would like to honestly just play music professionally for a living. You know, I want to, you know, do cover bands and all this other stuff. Honestly, what I would like to do would be to produce and write my own music for YouTube channels and for, you know, for TV and stuff like that. You know, like, you can just, like, because what I notice is that a lot of these YouTubers and video game streamers and everything, they use copyrighted music in a lot of their YouTube videos. And a lot of the times their videos get taken down by YouTube because it's original content. And, you know, it's, and you can't market it, you know.
Or they'll give you some free open source crap.
Right. Well, shit. YouTube, as a YouTuber, YouTube has quite a lot of music and sound effects that you can use. Varying degrees of, you know, maybe you have to put something in the description of the video about who so-and-so wrote it, but most of it you can just use, and it says right there, you can use without any restrictions. There's also Creative Commons says, like, you can have a copyrighted song for a certain amount of time, but, like, part of my YouTube channel is having people perform, and if they say, hey, this is by so-and-so, and I have to put in, like, a little thing saying this song is by so-and-so, not by the person performing it, then I get a little notice from them saying, hey, the artist has decided to let you use it, but if there's any monetization, they get it instead of you. Now, I'm not to the point of monetization yet, so it doesn't hurt me, but it's still not a good feeling when you see that little notice.
Right.
And you're like, God damn it, why'd you have to do that song? But, you know.
But if you're able to sell your own original music to these, you know, to these channels and to a lot of these streamers, you know, they can market it however they wish. You know, they can have the rights over it and everything like that.
Yeah, exactly. Publishing and licensing is a real lucrative thing if you have that knack of writing things that they want for, you know, YouTube or movies or commercials or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I'm still trying to, like, I have a publishing deal with my bass player. Actually, he has a publishing company called Redstone Publishing. There you go, BJ. There's your plug. And I don't seem to write. I write music. What I was described as writing music for musicians. I don't seem to write music for, like, the earworm that gets in your brain or that suspenseful moment in the movie or whatever.
Right.
And I'm sure if I applied myself to it, probably would. But it's not. That's not what gets my yayas out. You know.
Well, there's something to be said to that when you're writing music. If you're writing for a fan or writing for yourself, writing for someone else versus yourself.
Yeah, I write for myself because...
Well, also part of the idea is that when you write music for film and TV, like, that isn't just coming from a love of music, but also from a love of film.
Right, that is literally, I have this particular visual thing in mind to write this for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I just don't bother.
Yeah, because music can make or break a scene in a big climactic scene.
Oh, yeah. As a YouTuber, I'm well aware that if I don't put it, like, sometimes you're just watching, like, this is really boring. Hey, let me put
at least something
in there, whether it's my music or not. And I just got tired of using my own music, quite frankly. Now I'm using other people's. real quick, do we have any, at the time of recording, we're going to get to you. But at the time of recording, it's Thursday. Do we have any shows coming up this weekend to announce?
Yeah, tomorrow I'm talking to Hemlock at Triple D's. Doing an interview and photos with them. They're playing with Mastiff, Antitrust.
Nebula.
I have a lot of love for Antitrust. It's an all-Filipino metal band. I love them so much.
Mabuti.
Nebula X. And then there was the Gregory Michael Davis show at Vinyl.
His long-awaited CD release. I think it's 5 years in the making or something.
Yeah, we've been friends a long time. I've known that kid a long time. And I used to watch him play ukulele blindfolded at Triple B's. That was fun.
I don't know where to go from there.
I just want to thank you all for contributing to Las Vegas culture and the music scene. And I'm curious, who else do you respect locally, local bands, metal or otherwise?
You want to take a first shot? I got a couple.
I'd say the first one that comes to mind would probably be Alligator Blood. This is a band, you know, they've been playing in this town for quite some time now, a couple of years. The bass player for that band actually used to play for our band. You know, her name is Angel. What they're doing right now is that they're shooting, like, I think it was like 4 or 5 different music videos right now. And honestly, like, I respect that because they're willing to just go ahead and start marketing themselves,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, they understand that, like, you know, we got to put ourselves out there first and then we can start playing shows. You know, it works in exponents, you know. There's several ways you can do it to market yourself or to play shows or to go into the studio or go on a tour, whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But the way that the route that they're taking, you know, by shooting all their music videos and just having content just to start off with, and then they'll come up with merch and start playing shows. That's a great, I think it's honestly a great strategy and it's a great idea.
I agree. A lot of new bands are sometimes too money hungry. They get they're like, let's get merch so we can make money. Yep. And you're like, why don't you get fans first?
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Get the market first because someone may buy a CD.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, if you're building that rabid fan base, then no matter what you put out here, here's, you know, our old drum head or whatever, that people will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good addition to what I was saying with investing in yourself, with smart investing in yourself.
Yeah, I hope that at some point they're going to be playing, like while they're playing, they're going to be playing the video of the song.
Right.
I hope they do that.
Mm-hmm.
I especially like the kind of art, I don't know, avant-garde thing where the video is like on them as they're playing.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you earlier before we started recording this. Like, I had a show, and it fell through, but we were doing, Chad, again, the guy who was sounding with, he's a visual artist, so he made, like, a whole video thing for, like, my set, you know? And, like, that was the idea. I was like, oh, I'm going to develop Underground. It's going to play over me, you know? And then we never got to use it.
That's so, where I got that from.
The, yeah,
Underground.
The
Thank
fucking
you.
Factory. And, like, Lou Reed's one of my, like, all-time heroes. Like, probably no surprise, like, sad white boy singer-songwriter, Lou Reed. But, you know, I do like love that. It's a good, the visual component's fun no matter what. But that's something I try to do too, just as a solo artist, to make, always make it interesting and have some kind of connection, dialogue, I guess, between the audience.
Who else do you love locally, Brendan?
Locally, I like Blair Duane and his band Rusty Maples, which play sporadically, but I saw they have two shows.
They're kind of big too.
Yeah,
they're
great.
They're...
I love him. And I go to singer-songwriter events all the time, and he's really cool and supportive of my stuff. And my friend Kat Calling, have you photographed her?
Yeah.
We're
friends.
Yeah, I love her. She's fucking hilarious. I was watching her play. And Dark Black. And
Dark Black are amazing.
Yeah. Like, those are the homies. And I don't say that just because they're homies. I like to make that clear. I would be a fan of theirs even if I weren't friends with them. Because that is, like, totally the kind of, like, music I like a lot. Especially right now, getting back into that sort of kind of weird dark wave post-punk thing. So... yeah.
Any names you want
to
drop?
There's one we played with a couple of times, Any Last Words.
Mm-hmm.
We're good buddies with them. They
yep.
support us. We
yeah.
support them.
They're monsters.
We really got to yep. thank them a lot, you know,
yeah.
because, you know, we've seen a lot of success together.
We did a little house show not too long ago, just a few weeks before our House of Blues
yeah,
show.
That was
a fun
cool.
night.
That was a fun time.
Yeah. Cake stands and all.
Jeez.
Yeah, that was a good old
wow.
classic house party.
Jimmy drove a tricycle into the pool.
As you do.
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't a car available, so.
There you go.
That still pales in comparison to the lead singer of The Social Set, who played a set, and then...
Jay Willie.
Yeah, he played a set, and he got so drunk that he left everything, including his clothes, and walked home in his underwear. His car, and everything. And I was like, damn. Damn,
that's messed up.
That's metal. That's punk. That's actually
that's some Sid Barrett type shit. Right
yeah,
there,
it's like, hey, where's the singer? Whose clothes are these? Oh man.
So, what is your favorite thing about playing in Vegas? I don't know. What's your favorite venue?
That's a tough one. Because there's some venues that aren't even around anymore.
Yeah, I was gonna say like Adrenaline Bar, Cheyenne Saloon.
Yeah.
Well, no,
yeah.
Adrenaline
used
to
be
up.
The spot. I mean, that was the spot. I wish that place would just be open. He tried so hard to change Cheyenne Saloon from what it was. I remember playing on Cheyenne Saloon and the stage moved underneath you. If you went to the center of it.
Right.
And that was scary. That was interesting.
Is that
and then he put a brand new
Adrenaline?
No, Adrenaline had to close. Unfortunately, I forget why. I think it's some
really?
You
I
just
even
couldn't
know
afford
that.
It or business something.
It was but then the new owners bar. Tried to the new owners tried to you know they tried to run it, but they didn't even have a gaming license. You know, when I went in there with the new owners, all the slot machines were turned off, and I'm like, oh, you guys are gonna just go ahead and go to the hole. Sure enough, like a couple weeks after that, they closed down.
Last time I was there was like maybe 2 years ago. Is that right? Or still been 2 years ago?
Something like that. Yeah. Was it a Steelers bar?
It was.
I played. Yeah, it was a Steelers bar.
It was adrenaline. I remember thinking when they changed, I was like, oh. Now it's just going to be like a sports bar, generic sports bar. Mm-hmm. But then I saw Marduk fucking play there, like a little bands, like, and it was very like policed. Like I remember they kicked a bunch of people out for like even vaguely moshing, you know?
Really?
That's the thing.
Vaguely
moshing,
they,
you know? So it was like, oh, I get to see this awesome black metal band that they can't, because I think they canceled their tour before. I was like, fuck yeah, finally get to see him. And it was just very like subdued, you know? I was like, I guess this has to be like an indie rock show. I'm going to stand here with my fucking arms folded and watch these dudes in corpse paint. Like.
Yeah, I don't understand that because like my old band, when I was in my old band Wretched Sky, we opened up for Fear Factory there, you know, and it's like if you can't mosh there. Then
well, I opened
you,
for...
You've got a pit right there.
Yeah.
I opened for Metalachi 2 years ago there was a very big pit and very big crowd in there. That's why I'm like, this is all surprising to me. Like I didn't know it closed. And, it was a bunch of terrible towels all behind the stage. And I was like, all right, because
they would like look
now.
At people. People, like when I was at that show, and like if it looked like someone was like about to start a mosh, like if they just saw someone kind of walking around in the middle, you know, it's like, oh, they're traipsing back and forth, fucking get them, you know?
I don't know,
really.
Throw them out
maybe
the side
they must
door.
Have had something happen.
Yeah,
maybe
that's what I thought.
Maybe because Metalachi, it was just so packed in there. I mean, then you have the guys on stage throwing brawls into the. I mean, if you ever seen them live, they're a comedy act, also.
Yeah.
It is a whole thing.
Yeah.
It was a blast, but yeah. That sucks. That place is closed. Mm. I liked the receded.
That was like the.
I was just gonna talk about how the monitors were in the stage flat.
It sucked. They had to be like, keep going up. I don't hear nothing. Keep going up.
Yeah, and they had a ramp for your
for your gear.
Yeah,
your
but
gear.
It was like it was at a 30 degree angle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but once you've lifted a bass cab above your waist to get it on stage, you're happy with any improvement.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as venues go, you know. Adrenaline Bar was like the one.
And you're playing Dive Bar?
We are playing Dive Bar next week on the 30th on Friday.
I think my favorite stage probably have to be, I mean, House of Blues.
House of Blues is great.
The size of it, I rock a wireless, so I can go anywhere.
It's a big stage. You got a lot of room. You know, there's a lot that you can do with it.
Obviously, it was good for you, Sullivan, because, you know, the debut show was basically launched you guys, and I think House of Blues was a perfect launching place.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd done that show, like, the Dive Bar wouldn't have had the same...
Well, it was funny, because we played our first show there. We had a few technical issues. But then coming back a year later with a bigger crowd and an actual following and like overcoming those issues, I think was the real big seller.
So
there.
What do you want to see more of in Vegas as far as venue-wise?
Well, I'd like to see more
venues.
Them.
Yeah,
more of them
more
would
venues.
Be nice.
More venues like, that are specifically like, we want music and we want music fans. We don't have like the gaming stuff.
Do I like going to Evil Pie? Yes, but bands out here deserve better than Evil Pie. Okay, they deserve like a real concert venue that we can play at.
Right, and deserve to be compensated.
I mean,
properly
yes,
for your
and
time.
Compensation too. You know, these bands work hard. I go to all their shows, and I go to the same rehearsal studio as a lot of these bands. These guys are putting in the time and the work.
And the money.
You know, and the money.
There's plenty of shows I played around here where payment was a beer and maybe food, and then you maybe could set up a merch table. And they might take a percentage of that.
Vegas has the potential to cultivate a great artist and music community.
I agree.
Unfortunately, this city is not willing to afford that to them.
I think part of the problem is the transient nature of the town, but also we don't have that identity like, say,
Seattle.
New Orleans. You
or
know,
Seattle.
You know,
we're not known as a music capital.
Yeah, if you say... Seattle. That's a metal town.
That's a grunge
town. I was just in Seattle. And you know, you get off the plane, you walk to the airport, and the first things you see is Sub Pop as a record store right in the airport.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, shit.
I just read it said the mayor of Seattle now named August 22nd Stan, right? Yeah.
Oh, no, Lane Staley.
It, Lane. I was it's not Stan.
Just,
yeah, Stan.
No, you were way off.
Yeah, I was like, I was doing just
yeah,
Lexi.
They declared
Stanley
August
Lane.
22nd as Lane Staley Day for their town.
Wow.
Because
like
that was
Stan
his
Lane.
Birthday. They
nice.
Actually just announced that today.
I really...
Interesting. Where's the Chris Cornell Day? And you know.
They have... But he has a statue and everything out there.
Yeah.
He has a statue, like an iron statue.
You can visit a statue. You can't visit a holiday.
Dude, I was like... God damn. I was like... I don't usually get that whole thing when I travel of like, oh, it's a better life. But I was like, man, I come on, I live in Seattle. Like, my best friend, I'm joking
rain?
Around.
Yeah.
I do like rain. It was all right, but it doesn't rain as much because of climate change. So I guess
okay.
that's.
Oh, dude, I'll be
there
honest.
You go.
There is podcast.
It's just overcast.
If I could live anywhere,
yeah, it's overcast.
It probably wouldn't be Seattle.
It felt so nice. And like,
I don't know. Portland, Oregon.
Mine's Colorado
Portland?
Springs.
Around there.
Portland's a much smaller town, but I think that would probably make it a little bit more cathartic,
right.
I think, in its own way. I haven't been to Portland. So.
We were this close to moving there before my daughter got into the charter school she's in, which is amazing. And we have friends in Tigard, which is right. It's like the suburb of Portland. So for us, it would be cool to be there because we have all these friends that we haven't seen in years. So what are you doing, Tiffany?
I was going to do a little video.
Oh. What up?
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Can you believe we've been doing this over an hour? It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are fun.
There's so much to talk about, and we can go on forever.
Well,
like,
my phone's going to die eventually.
You're all going to be great. You've been great subjects.
Subjects?
You ever seen what a sounding looks like? I'm willing to show you what a sounding looks like.
See, I like the idea of the film. When I did sounding, it was like, this will desensitize me to how like even that word makes me feel. We say it so much now, I'm like...
You realize you just said, when I did sounding.
Yeah, when I did... Oh, yeah.
When you participated?
When I participated in sound, when I got sounded.
Tell us more about that wonderful experience.
No.
Was it a nickel or silver rod?
Stainless steel.
Oh,
it was a rusty nail.
Oh, even better. You got tetanus.
Was it a 9-inch nail?
Oh, talk about walking funny.
Now we're getting back to where I'm like kind of cringing and recoiling and closing my legs and really thinking about it.
Criminy.
I really appreciate you guys having us on the show, though. I like to do stuff like this, you know.
Yeah, this was fun. I think it's fun too, like having. You know, the different...
Honestly,
different
I think this
nice
is a great
panel.
Idea, having the
yeah,
two
panel.
Different acts.
Yeah, I think you all melded well together.
Yeah.
I think we're all pretty easygoing guys,
yeah.
You know, but if you had, like, other guys...
If you had other guys...
If you had anybody else in here...
Like, say, three other members of Hidden Scar.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys.
All right, well, do want to say thank you again. Thank you for listening, of course, to Under the Neon. Please support local music. Get out there and, you know, they're playing for you and they won't be able to play if you don't frequent the venues, buy a drink, buy the merch. Definitely keep supporting local music. And I guess that's about it, right?
Well, we got one closing thing still. We got a, we're not releasing too many details yet, but we offered a national tour coming up here.
Ooh.
In October.
20 dates with a trigger within.
Yep, and it's across the entire nation from Florida to Baltimore to
see
everywhere.
Some people would consider you already made it if you're doing
now
tours
that's
like that.
That's what we're bringing us up
I
for.
Never got that opportunity, and I always wished. I kind of wanted that, and then I was like, but I like my band.
So part of this is sort of like an audition for us essentially with this touring management company, not saying they're going to sign us with, and there's no intention, you know, nothing like that,
right?
But in order for us to make sure we keep getting opportunities like that, we got to make sure we impress these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do that is by packing the show, is by getting people there.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
And the hard
yeah.
thing is, I mean, we can hustle this town. I mean, we've handed out thousands of tickets
right.
in this town easy, but for these shows we're having to do a lot of advertising online, so we are launching a Kickstarter actually. You can find that at www.hiddenscars.com/kickstarter, and we're basically just making an ad campaign to try and boost this potential for us to pack these shows out of town.
Cool. I'll make sure the link is in the show notes.
Perfect, thank you.
Absolutely appreciate your support.
No worries. And again, thank you for listening. We need to cut this off. My kid needs to go to sleep.
We could go on forever.
Thank
yes.
you, guys.
Well, thank you.
We'll be back for part two.
Thank yes. you very much, London.
Yes. So,
wonderful to have you.
Very enlightening conversation. I enjoyed this
yes,
a lot.
Yes. Thanks, Brennan, for the enlightening news.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
I'm going to share a real fun topic at work tomorrow.
This podcast brought to you by Sounding. Sounding. It's worse than you think.
Word of the day.
And yes, the word of the day is Sounding.
Now we're going to take a couple photos.
Right? So, of sounding?
Oh, God.
Of our subjects.
All right. I'll be happy
to get my med kit.
Oh, yeah. On behalf of Tiffany Solero and myself, Joshua Corwright, and Brendan K. Jones, The Midnight Disease, and Sounding, and Solomon and Piper from
Hidden Scars.
I wasn't done. Thanks for listening, and everyone say goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Peace out.